Hi, this is Suna Rose Wagner of the Ravenettes, and you're listening to CJAM 99.1 FM, Windsor, Detroit.
Listening to Magna Carta Pro Bono Radio on CJAM 99.1 FM. This is Corey, your host for the afternoon, along with my co-host Anita. A quick recap of PBSC as an organization. If you're tuning in for the first time, I would like to extend a warm welcome and just recap what our organization Pro Bono is all about. Since Windsor focuses on social justice, Pro Bono fits in perfectly with its work to match law student volunteers with organizations to deliver legal services which are in great need but lack sufficient resources. All pro bono projects are under the supervision of a lawyer. Pro bono not only provides law students with volunteer opportunities to develop legal skills, but also has a positive impact on the legal profession through promoting the value of pro bono service, and it aims to increase access to justice across Canada through its 22 chapters in Canada and 23 law schools.
Before we get into any legal topic discussion, we just want to let everyone know that anything said on this radio talk show are the opinions of those people only and do not reflect CJAM as a radio station. The information provided on this episode is to not be construed as legal advice, but rather legal information.
So since this is my first time on the radio station, I believe I should do an introduction of who I am. I'm Corey Mattina, and I'm from Caledonia, Ontario. That's about 20 minutes outside of Hamilton. I went to McMaster University to study sociology, and I'm currently a first-year student at Windsor Law.
Good afternoon, Windsor and Detroit. My name is Anita Osmani. I'm originally from Pickering, Ontario, and for those of you who don't know what city that is the hometown of Shawn Mendes. I did my undergrad at University of Western Ontario in London. I studied history with a minor in ethics. I am also a first-year law student here at the University of Windsor, and I joined Pro Bono to gain some radio experience and to show the public what Pro Bono is all about and what programs we have to offer. Today on the show, we'll be discussing the Pro Bono project, Only Yes Means Yes, which touches upon cell phone use in classrooms. An article was released in the spring of last year by the reporter Kristen Rushaway in The Star titled, Ford Government Bans Cell Phones from Classrooms for Non-Educational Purposes. Cell phones are banned from schools earlier this fall in an effort to prioritize learning over cell phone use. I don't know about you, Corey, but when I was in class, I would always use my cell phone.
I wouldn't, personally, but I didn't have a very good one. Like many people, I had a flip phone and there wasn't much texting going on anyway. It was a pay-as-you-go, so times have changed, and apparently this is what's going on in Ontario schools. So, Anita, what do you think about this proposed ban on cell phones? Do you think it'll be useful? It'll help the students learn?
To be honest, back when I was in school, I was using my cell phone quite frequently, whether it be texting friends or sending Snapchats or just sending memes around. But I do think that a lot of students these days have cell phones accessible to them, and it can be quite distracting and, quite frankly, really distracting for the teachers as well, which are people who are trying to, you know, educate their students and maintain a certain focus in the classroom. Actually, when I was in high school, I had a geography teacher who had a bucket in front of the classroom, and before we went into class every day, he would force us to throw our cell phones in there. And to be honest, this, you know, kind of really aggravated the students because it was our personal property, but in the end, it helped us focus more on the class and helped us focus more with each other and interact with students rather than, you know, through cell phone, texting, Snapchat, etc.
Would any of the students just bring a second phone, one to throw in the bucket and one to carry on and text and do whatever they were doing?
I don't think people really had the means to have two cell phones back then. We just, you know, had our Blackberries, and that was kind of, BBM was the thing back then, and we'd kind of, you know, communicate through there with other students. But I did think that, you know, the shift was focused more towards the learning opportunity. But even now in law school, you know, teachers don't really give you heck for having your phone out there. But, you know, it's a more of a respect thing as well, and you want to pay attention and start to learn more.
And even currently in school, it can be very distracting when other students are on their phones, and especially when they're on the internet and you can see it from behind them. It takes your attention away from the class and away from the learning, and I think that might be what they were intending with this proposal.
You know what's actually really annoying is that when you're in class and there's just a silent period and someone's phone just starts going off, especially during some really important conferences like moot court or when the teacher is trying to teach, it's pretty awkward.
Yeah, it really can disrupt the continuity of a lesson, and it becomes problematic. And what I think another important thing that has changed over time is these cell phones are, it's so easy to send pictures and videos through them that schools are having an issue with the sharing and possession of explicit images student to student. And they're trying to deal with those issues, and potentially this is a way they can combat that problem.
Yeah, Corey, and that's exactly what we'll be talking about today on air. We'll be speaking about pro bono only yes means yes, and the students will be discussing some projects they've implemented and introduced into classrooms regarding cell phone use. I mean, even in high school, I remember some explicit images floating around here and there, and, you know, it was quite embarrassing for other students and caused a lot of wreck havoc. But I think students are just so concerned about trying to be funny and sending memes and, you know, taking videos and that sort of thing. But, you know, I think a lot of parents and teachers are actually for this ban. I don't know. What do you think the students have to say about it?
In terms of what the students have to think about it, I'm sure many of them are frustrated with losing their phones. But maybe later on they'll realize that this was for their own benefit.
Yeah, no one likes getting their cell phone taken away from them. If anything, it makes them feel more like a child. But, you know, when you're younger, you don't really think of these sorts of things. Now, as you get older, especially here in Windsor in law school, we're very, you know, put our phones away, let's talk later sort of thing, because we really just want to focus on the content itself. But I think a lot of students who are younger, they're not taking it so much, you know, seriously or that.
So Anita, I think another issue is when you're in high school, how aware are you of the law in terms of what you were doing with your cell phone? What is the difference between sending a message to a friend that is funny or a meme or whatever, and what is treading the grounds of illegality?
Oh, for sure. I don't think a lot of students even know the legal ramifications of what they're doing. I mean, I'm sure they know that once you're 18, you hit as an adult, different laws apply to you. But then again, it's important to kind of introduce these concepts to them, you know, explicit images and sharing inappropriate content or, you know, even secrets to other students. So, you know, I think it's good to expose them to this sort of thing, and so that they don't have to get in trouble later on in life.
Yeah, and things that students do in high school, they could damage their reputation. And if they're if they don't see a problem in sharing explicit images while in high school and or possessing them, and they could get into a lot of legal trouble and damage their reputations in the future.
Yeah, I think everyone's just trying to be funny at this point, you know, trying to be comedic and share these pictures and information. But it's really embarrassing, to be honest. And again, like you said, it can damage your reputation. So I think that it's quite positive to introduce this thing early on. And I think over time, the cell phone ban will be, you know, second nature to these students. And hopefully it does have some kind of positive result coming from it.
And when I think about it, if I put myself in the shoes of teachers and school administrators, and I think the seemingly blurry lines in terms of if a student is doing something or sending images outside of class, when does it become an issue? When these images are brought into the classroom, when they're seen in the classroom, what happens if they're on the phone of the student who is in the classroom? It's not explicitly clear to everyone, and I think that's one of the issues with having the cell phones in class.
Yeah, exactly. And that's exactly what we'll be speaking with Kira and Jeff about today. They're going to go over some of the projects that they've been doing and how the cell phone ban in classes have been responded to. And they'll kind of go over the legal ramifications of it as well.
Yeah, so hopefully Kira and Jeff can clarify some of that that information for us, because there's a lot of people go to high school and it's important to know whether what you're doing is if you're just engaging in harmless fun with your cell phone or whether you're committing a crime. So I think that's important. It's definitely an important discussion, because if it's unclear and people don't know, then they won't be able to act accordingly. So it's clear that the purpose of this is to prevent distraction in the classroom so students can focus on learning. But I think an issue that we'll see in the high schools is an issue of enforcement. Is it going to be something like Anita said, where the teacher has a bucket and everyone's giving their phone at the beginning of class? Is the beginning of each class? Is this going to cut into class time? There are a series of issues there that I think will need to be further examined.
Yeah, I mean, like, how are the teachers going to know whose phone is whose? I assume it would take quite a lot of time after class to kind of, you know, distribute the phones back, whose is whose. And I mean, what if someone takes another person's phone? That could also impose some issues of its own. But I'm sure they'll have some kind of plan to kind of, you know, make this effective as possible so it doesn't cut into class time. But again, there could be an issue of, you know, property in terms of, oh, no, that's my phone. You gave it to the wrong person.
Yeah, I'm sure that'll all come out in the wash over time. But another issue, I think, is... But there really is that issue now with, especially how many people do you know have gone through many phones within their life? They have phones in their dressers, wherever, right? I don't think it'd be too difficult to just have an extra phone that you're going to throw in Anita's teacher's bucket and then just carry on with your phone for the rest of the day. And what type of disciplinary measures are they going to do for students who violate this rule within the classroom? Are we going to be suspending students, expelling students, removing them from the classroom for having a cell phone because they're distracting others?
Yeah, I mean, I remember when I was in high school, whenever we had our phones out, teachers would kind of give us a warning at the beginning. But if it became a predominant issue, then they would start taking our phones away. And, you know, we'd probably give them a little bit of wreck havoc for that. But sometimes they would even put it in the general office if it became a real big issue. So, I mean, the implementation of this rule, I'm not sure how it's going to play out. But I think that all in all, it's probably in the best interest of the students, even though they can't see that right now.
And like I said, I'm thinking those other issues will come out in the wash. So we'll just see in time what happens. So today we have our guests, Kira and Jeff, from the Only Yes Means Yes project. I'd first like to thank you for coming in today. And we'd like to get started with an introduction of yourself and why you joined PBSC in general.
So I'm Jeff. Thanks for having me, guys. It's awesome to be here. A little bit about myself. I'm in first year law school here at Windsor. I'm in the dual JD program. So I spend half my time practicing at University of Detroit Mercy or studying, and half the time studying at Windsor, which has been great so far. And the reason I got involved with the Pro Bono Students of Canada was because I really wanted to find one way to be involved in first year where I could make an impact and give back to my community. And it really stuck out of all the options that I saw at the beginning of the year, what would be the best. And then being chosen to be on Only Yes Means Yes was what I wanted, because I have two younger sisters, and so I really care about this sort of cause. So it's been really great to be involved in this organization so far, and I look forward to continuing with this organization throughout my whole time at law school.
So yeah, there are very many projects in pro bono. You specifically wanted to be in this Only Yes Means Yes project for those reasons?
Correct. Yeah. Look, I mean, when you apply for this organization, there's a bunch of different projects they offer here at Windsor. So they ask you to rank your projects. And when I was reading through the project descriptions and the different ones, this one really stood out to me as one that would have a large impact in the community. I think the conversations we have with students in the Windsor area are very important. They are the conversations that need to be had and a lot of times aren't had. And being in law school, I think they're conversations that we can facilitate really well with we go and present to high school students mainly, but also other various groups. And I think we're in a position where we can give back to the community and teach them through our lens as first-year law students.
That's fantastic, Jeff. Thank you for your insight. And now we're going to talk to Kira from your project. How do you refer to each other? Are you two partners in the project, or what is it?
I guess, so we work actually in partners for most of the workshops, but Jeff and I have not been paired on a workshop together yet. So just colleagues on the project for now, hopefully partners on a future project though.
All right, Kira. So tell me a little bit about yourself. I want to know like where you're from and what you've done within the project.
Okay, so I'm Kira Selina. I am a 1L student in the single JD program here at the Faculty of Law at Windsor. I'm from Hamilton, Ontario, so close to home for you. And I did my undergrad at McMaster University as well. And then I specifically got involved in this project and with PBSC because the Only Yes Means Yes project spoke to me above all the other ones. And yeah, so I was just really intrigued and wanting to get involved and facilitate these conversations similar to what Jeff said.
Oh, yeah. So it's just like what Jeff was saying in terms of you specifically wanted this project. Out of all the projects, you wanted this one. You wanted to carry on with that, this project's work.
Yeah, exactly. I felt that the work that we're doing here is very important, and I wanted to be a part of contributing to that work and to having the message heard.
That's great, Kira. Thank you. We're going to move on to what Only Yes Means Yes is really about. So, Jeff, can you tell me a little bit about the project and what your aims are?
Of course. So Only Yes Means Yes is a program that was built and is run by LEAF, which is Women's Legal Education and Action Fund. And this fund is a national charitable nonprofit organization that was founded in 1985. LEAF works to advance the equality of women and girls in Canada through litigation, law reform, and public education using the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms. LEAF works to ensure that Canadian courts protect the equality rights and guarantees to women and girls by Section 15 of the Charter. So that's the work that LEAF does, and our project, Only Yes Means Yes, is one of the ways they do this. So Only Yes Means Yes is an educational program designed to educate young people about their legal rights and responsibilities engaging in sexual relations. The workshops we present focus on the crime of sexual assault, sexting, and consent. The workshops have been developed for a target audience of high school students in grade 9 to 12, or we have a slight variation on it for students between the age of 13 and 18. It can be easily adapted to suit any educational setting, including post-secondary schools, workshops, workplace settings, union meetings, or public seminars. So what we do is we take this workshop that has been developed by LEAF, the Only Yes Means Yes workshop, and we present it and try to educate people in the community about this important.
And that's great. I really think that, you know, we do need a project like this to kind of inform young girls and boys about the legal ramifications surrounding consent and how they can, you know, achieve this. Can you talk about some of the specific goals about the project, Jeff?
Of course. So Only Yes Mean Yes strives to achieve three main goals. One, to help students understand the legislation and case law surrounding sexual assault and consent. Two, to ensure students understanding the nature and legal consequences of sexting. And three, to enable students to be able to recognize consent and identify strategies for obtaining consent prior to engaging in sexual activities. So as you can tell, those are three highly topical things with students these days. Every high school student most likely or a university student is going to come across one of these topics, and everything we do or we present revolves around achieving these three goals. So every time we go into a workshop, the goal is to educate and inform based on these three goals.
And when you were in high school, Jeff, did you find that the discussion surrounding consent to be adequate, or was it lacking?
Personally, I went to an all-boys school, so I believe, these conversations were lacking. I may have had in all high school, I had one sex ed class, which I believe was wholeheartedly not enough, especially being in the environment of an all-boys school. There should have been many more conversations regarding this important topic, being in the environment we were in, and the values our school tried to promote. I think that is the place they lacked for sure.
Okay, and given that you went to an all-boys school, how do you think that kind of changed things for you? You know, what are your views on this topic, and what do you think can be done to make the issue around consent more informed to the public?
Well, I think it really starts with having these conversations. That's the best way to learn about it. I know a lot of people, when they're younger, have trouble talking about this. They think it's funny, they think it's stupid, but that's because we're not having these conversations the way we should. This stuff should not be taboo. This stuff should be open and talked about all the time, because that's how you're going to teach a generation what consent is and how to respect consent and understand all the nuances of what consent is. We live in a world where consent is very nuanced, and people don't really understand what is consent, what isn't consent. There's a lot of alcohol involved a lot of times the first time people consent. So I think these are conversations, if they're had properly and they're had early enough, they can make a big difference. And I think generally we're moving in that direction. Like, all this talk has become less taboo than it was, say, 5 or even 10 years ago. But more definitely has to be done. And coming from an all-guys school, I know boys can benefit from this a lot, because a lot of boys don't understand or understand what consent is, or how the girl's perspective. So I think these conversations need to happen. They're very important, and that's why I really support and like what our project does, because I believe we are making a difference in boys' lives and then in girls' lives also.
And are you guys specifically targeting, you know, public schools that are an intermix of boys and girls?
So yeah, I think we target anyone that will listen to us, because no one is too old or too young to hear this talk. You can learn at any age, and there can be middle-aged people who need to learn about consent, and there can be kids in grade 9 who need to learn about consent. So we will go and talk to anyone who is down to listen, because really anyone can learn about consent and improve their understanding of this complex topic.
Of course, and it's important to keep this conversation going. So thank you so much for your insight on that, Jeff. We really appreciate it.
No problem. Thank you.
At this point, we will take a short break, and we'll be right back with Magna Carta Pro Bono Radio after some messages.
This is Joe and Cam, your favorite two male nursing students at the University of Windsor, hosting No Scrubs on CGM FM 99.1.
Join me and Joe every Tuesday at 12 and Wednesday at 4:30, where we discuss today's hottest health topics related to student life. We do the research, so you don't have to.
Remember, you can listen live or online at www.cgm.ca. And while you're at it, feel free to give us a follow at CGM No Scrubs on Facebook.
Canadian Blood Services invites you to save a life today. Every 60 seconds, someone in Canada needs blood. Donating is simple, and your blood will go to help Canadians undergoing heart surgery, leukemia treatment, or those involved in an accident. Go online and book your appointment today at www.blood.ca, or give us a call toll-free at 1-888-2-DONATE. That's 1-888-236-6283.
And we are back. You are listening to CJM 99.1 FM Pro Bono Radio, Magna Carta. Before the break, we were chatting with Kira and Jeff, PBSC students working with the project.
So Kira, I want to know, like, when you were in high school, what did you find the discussion was like surrounding sexual education and consent?
So when I was in high school, I found that the discussion was lacking quite a bit. I also personally attended a Catholic high school, so talking about things like sex and safe sexual practices was relatively taboo, and especially in the classroom. It was never talked about in class and definitely not talked about amongst peers. So one of the things that I really like about this workshop is that it helps to facilitate the discussion between the students themselves. I think that oftentimes teenagers can feel quite a bit uncomfortable talking about topics like consent, and sometimes a little help is just needed to start that discussion. And so given that these discussions were a rarity in high school, it just sort of makes me more aware of how students and youth are responding now, and it really impressed me how seriously they've been taking the content and how willing they are to engage in the discussion as well.
So this high school experience has significantly impacted the way you as an individual conduct yourself within these workshops and educate students.
Yeah, I think just given that we have different audiences, like Jeff mentioned, you're never too old to learn about consent. The way that you conduct yourself in the workshop and sort of how you're talking to your crowd just depends on the crowd that you are presenting to. So presenting to high school students certainly can be a challenge because sometimes it's hard to keep their attention. But I think that they have done a really good job in taking away the messages from the workshop that we've intended for them.
So that's the general target audience is the students within high school. But you're saying you also give this information to other people, anyone really who's willing to listen.
Yeah, exactly. So a lot of the places that we go into to run the workshops are high school classrooms, but the workshop is also run in various community organizations, so that is not limited to just youth.
So I'd like to know, what's the reception? What are the students saying about this project? Because I'm sure you have a lot of one-on-one time with them getting to talk about these issues. I just want to know how they feel about the project. Are they supportive of it? Do they like these conversations?
So they seem to have been very receptive to the content, and the feedback that we've gotten has been really positive. And they actually wanted more activities from the workshop. So that was really good feedback. We only do have an hour to present the content, but throughout the presentations, they've been very engaged, and they were more than willing to answer the questions and participate in the group activities, whereas you might expect high school students to be a little more timid and shy, especially when talking about this kind of thing.
So you're talking about group activities. What types of group activities are involved in the project?
So one of the things that we do is distribute to the students a hypothetical fact scenario, and then we have them work in smaller groups of about 3 to 5 students to talk about the scenario, and then we also present them with a list of like options moving forward of what this person should do, and we have them give us their feedback about what they think the best option might be, what the worst option might be, and we talk a little bit about why. We also explore some of the other options and talk about why they may or may not be useful as well.
So they get to choose their own adventure with a fact scenario and then see how that parallels with what you guys are instructing them?
Yeah, it just kind of helps walk them through a real life scenario that high school students might find themselves in, and sort of opens up resources and options and lets them know what to do moving forward within like a legal context.
So within that legal context, and you are a 1L student, do you bring in any cases that have been, say, heard at the Supreme Court? And do you discuss any of that with these students, or is it more about just these activities per se?
So one of the activities is actually centered around The Queen and Ewenchuck, which is a 1999 Supreme Court decision. And the gist of this decision, basically, the Supreme Court indicates that there is no defense of implied consent in Canadian law. So the activity that we do with this case just really sort of reflects that and just really sort of hammers in the fact that consent always has to be communicated.
And they're receptive of that, like talking about Supreme Court cases?
Yeah, so the classes that we have gone into so far have been law classes. So they're a little bit more familiar with how things work. They're a little bit of an older grade 11, 12 student crowd. But yeah, so in my experience, they've been really willing to talk about it, and they've been really good at participating in the workshop, especially with the, like, all the legal stuff that comes in.
Well, it's nice to hear that it's been a positive experience. What are the visions for the projects, the future ones you're going to do in other high schools? Because how many have you done so far?
So far, I've only completed one myself. Our project, though, has scheduled 3 workshops over the course of this semester. And then we'll be continuing doing more in the winter semester as well.
And are they all of the same general style that you'll be presenting to other schools in terms of providing that fact scenario and allowing the students to choose essentially their own adventure in terms of how they're going to respond to a problem and then letting them know how that fits in with the law?
Yeah, so the structure of the workshops is laid out by LEAF. So we actually go and do the activities that they have organized for us. But sort of the way in which we decide to run these activities or how you want to split up the groups with the students is at the discretion of the facilitator. So each volunteer might just have a different style or approach to how they want to run the workshop.
Do you have any, this is going to be a weird question, but do you have any guest speakers come in, like any prominent people in the legal field or wherever to discuss these issues and kind of lend some more credibility to some of the claims?
Not a weird question, a very good question, but no. So the workshops are only run by the 2 facilitators, the volunteers at the law school. We don't have any guest speakers at the moment that come in and sort of assist us with that. I think that's probably also in part due to it can be difficult to work around the schedules for the schools and the teachers and everything. But no, it's just run by the 2 volunteers.
So in terms of difficulties, do you find you have any difficulties presenting to this this material to the audiences, or is it easier because they've already had some of that sexual education growing up?
I think that it can be difficult for a number of reasons. One of those reasons being that the content that we're talking about can be triggering for some. So that's just something that you want to be aware of, especially when you're going into do a public legal education project. You want to be aware that there may be survivors in the room and just sort of conduct yourself accordingly. But other than that, I don't find it to be as difficult because I think the content is so important to talk about and can make such a difference in people's lives. So that sort of outweighs any difficulties that you run into dealing with or talking about important and difficult content.
So, Kira, what I want to know is this project seen at other schools?
So, yes. Some of the other Canadian law schools participate in the Only Yes Means Yes pro bono project. I know that the University of Calgary has run this workshop, as well as U Ottawa runs this workshop. I'm not too sure about any of the other Canadian law schools, but this project is run with the support of LEAF throughout Canada.
That's really interesting. So it's beyond Windsor. This isn't just a Windsor-focused initiative. It's becoming across the nation.
Yeah, exactly.
Thanks so much, Kira, for speaking to us about your current project and the aims behind it. So earlier, we were briefly discussing the most recent cell phone ban in Ontario schools. Jeff, do you have any thoughts on that, or what are your takeaways?
Well, I mean, I know growing up and going through high school, cell phones were always a problem in school. I'm not sure if this cell phone ban, I'm not sure how it's going to be implemented or how it changes, how it actually makes a change to what happens right now. I'm pretty sure before the cell phone ban, most students were not expected or allowed to be on their phone at school. Although, because you ask, one of the groups that did do a workshop in a classroom said they were shocked to find that there were a lot of students that were just like openly on their cell phones or had headphones in while they were doing their presentation or while the teacher was talking. And I know, like, from my experience being in high school, that certainly never was the case. If you got caught on your cell phone or using your cell phone during class, the teacher would either tell you to put it away or take it away in some circumstances. So I think the concept behind a cell phone ban is positive, but I'm not sure that it's any different than what teachers should be already enforcing without an actual legislation behind it. But then again, I also being told that one of our groups experienced like mass cell phone use in one of the classes where they were putting on a workshop was surprising to me. I don't understand how a teacher could think teaching like that is positive and why they wouldn't demand that their students not be on their cell phones, because I think that really does distract from positive engagement and learning in a classroom.
Right. And so how do you think the cell phone ban kind of falls into consent? So, you know, a lot of students these days can Snapchat images or they can be sexting sometimes. So what are your thoughts on that? Like, how does cell phone ban kind of target that sort of realm?
Personally, I'm not sure the cell phone ban in classrooms would affect that at all, because maybe it'll stop kids from sexting during class, but it certainly, if they want to sex, they're not going to not sex because a cell phone ban. They're just going to sext after class when they're allowed to be on their cell phone, or Snapchat after class. So if that's the point of the legislation targeting that, I don't think it'll have much of an effect, but maybe it'll keep it out of the classroom.
So, Jeff, you're a first-year law student. I'm sure you've seen many cell phones in the classroom and distracting devices. Do you find it impacts your ability to learn?
100%. I think everyone, all of us who have been in a classroom, have been distracted by your own device or someone else's device around you at one point or another. So I think, in law school, as a whole, we're a lot better at focusing in class because it's a little more serious for us than our undergrads. But I think that's what I was saying before. The intention of a cell phone ban is a positive one. I'm not sure if it should be in legislation, because I'm not sure it's actually possible for a teacher to fully enforce. But the intention behind it is like when you're learning, if you're on your phone or being distracted by your computer, you're not going to engage with the content as well. So I'm sure when I run my first workshop with only Yes Means Yes, I'm going to ask that everyone put away their cell phones or get rid of their devices so they can engage with what we're talking about. And then I'm going to tell them why they should put away their devices and engage, because they're not going to really learn about consent if they're only half paying attention. They're going to miss important things, and they won't take away the important takeaways if they're not fully engaged with our content and the discussions we're having. So definitely cell phones in the classroom are something that should not be present if you want to maximize your learning and engaging with the content that's being delivered to you.
Of course. So Anita mentioned earlier, she was talking about her experience in, I believe it was high school, with teachers confiscating phones and having all of them put into a bucket at the beginning of every class. Did that happen to you at all when you were in elementary or high school?
I don't think it was ever like in a bucket with a whole bunch of other cell phones, but I definitely had my cell phone taken away a few times by teachers, and that didn't feel very good. I'd be lying if I said I learned my lesson every time, but like definitely, I think everyone, most people who went through high school in the last 5 years or had their cell phones taken away at one point, because it is so distracting and so hard to just keep it in your pocket and not pull it out if you're in class. So one thing I would recommend is not even bringing your cell phone to class if you're in high school, just leaving it in your locker. All your friends are going to be in class too, so you can just wait until after class to, you know, check your Snapchats or text your buddy. One time I did lose my cell phone in a morning class, and the teacher didn't give it back to me till the end of the day, and that was way worse for me than if I had just left it in my locker and would have got it at the end of class rather than having to wait all the way to the end of the day. So just keep your cell phone in your locker and don't check it in class.
Yeah. So looking back at it now, now that you're older and you're not in high school anymore, do you wish there was some type of ban like that in place while you were in school? Do you think that would have helped your learning?
See, I think exactly, like I said, the concept, yes, but I think it's up to the teacher to enforce. I'm not sure, like, the ban isn't, like, the teacher still has to enforce this ban. Like, it's not like if a student's in the classroom right now, like, the cops are going to come if they're on their cell phone and, like, take them away. Like, the ban just gives teachers more power, I guess. But teachers should already have I believe, enough power. Teachers are in charge of the classroom, and if they don't want their students to be on their cell phones, which they shouldn't, they should be able to force it. I'm not sure that – I think this legislation is almost just a little redundant. Like, it should be the teacher's discretion to demand that there's no cell phones in their classroom, and I'm not sure why the government needs to be legislating this power that they should already have.
So the intent behind this move to ban cell phones in class is to prevent that distraction and to curb that behavior. But do you think there could also be the positive effect of these issues that are coming out in classrooms in terms of students sharing sexualized images within classrooms of their peers and fellow students? Do you think that this ban might have a second effect where it will actually curb that behavior as well?
So I could see if the cell phone ban is applied like at school, like you're not allowed to like have your device ever, I could see it potentially limiting the sharing of explicit sexual images between people, and maybe prohibit those from getting out. But I think at the end of the day, like, this is the way to like solve the problem of explicit sexual images like getting spread amongst high school students is not by like banning their cell phones. It's by engaging with them and teaching them that it's wrong and that they could get in trouble for it, and that it's actually legally against the law to share an explicit image with someone else who didn't intend to have it shared. So having, like, I believe change starts at like conversations and talking to people and having them understand things, not by just slapping a big X and like banning cell phones in general. So that's why I think what we're doing is so important. We go in and we talk to the students and talk about how sexting can affect yourself and the person you're sexting with, how sharing sexual images of yourself and receiving them from someone else can affect other people, and what happens if you share those images and how that can have legal ramifications against you. So giving them this knowledge so that hopefully they make better decisions rather than just saying we want to ban cell phones and hope that it has an ancillary effect that is positive towards the sharing of sexual images.
Yeah, that's really interesting, because essentially you're trying to educate them and persuade them so they can make this decision on their own, so they can make an informed decision rather than just simply not do something because it's banned at this current time. They should be wanting to engage in the correct behavior and not anything otherwise.
Exactly. And I mean, I know growing up, like, in my mind, I never would have been like, oh, like, if I see a sexual image on my phone that's of someone else, but I didn't get sent it directly from them, like, I could be in legal trouble. So I think having that conversation is important, and because like this potentially could ruin people's lives. So just like, and I don't think anyone would think that. So like having these conversations so they understand that, and so that they know that their actions have ramifications even at this younger age, and that to be safe and to be secure and to not share this sort of stuff broadly is really important.
That's an excellent point, Jeff. I do think it's really important to keep this conversation going. So thank you both so much for coming into CJAM today to talk to us about your project, Only Yes Means Yes.
So for just a quick recap for anyone who's joining us now, we were talking to Kira and Jeff from the Only Yes Means Yes project, and that's a project that has educational activities surrounding the topic of consent. I found it very interesting that they said they had positive feedback from the students. It seemed like overwhelming positive feedback. Were you expecting this, Anita?
To be honest, no, I wasn't expecting it. I mean, when you tell a bunch of kids or students that someone's coming in to talk to you about the issues surrounding consent, you know, I could probably see a couple of eye rolls here and there, because people probably do assume that they know quite a lot about it. So it was great to hear that they got positive feedback. I mean, you know, engaging the students and trying to, you know, get them involved and trying to inform them, I think that it goes a long way.
I found it neat that they wanted more activities. The students wanted more things to do. But one thing that was also interesting was that they only had an hour to do all of this. I find sometimes it's better to do things like this over the course of a morning. So like the whole day until lunch, it seems more meaningful. So maybe that's something we could talk to them about and see if they could do that in the future.
Oh, absolutely. I know that whenever we had guest speakers or, you know, Science Day back when I was a student in secondary and elementary school, that, you know, things stuck in my head more when it was over the course of an afternoon or over the course of a full day, because it's more impactful. Whereas only an hour kind of stipulates that it's just an in and out sort of thing. But, you know, it's great that they're doing this in the first place. But I do hope that this is a program that they can continue to, you know, do throughout the surrounding schools in every city, and to maybe even make it a longer activity.
I find it significant that they were working in groups of 3 to 5 students, because I think it would change if they had to complete this assignment individually and submit their answers. But I also think it's useful because they could see how their friends would react to situations and what types of activities their peers would find socially unacceptable.
And that's the, yeah, exactly. That's the beauty of working in group projects. I mean, you get to bounce ideas off each other. I mean, I can imagine that this conversation might be uncomfortable for some students, especially when working in groups. But then again, you know, they might not take it as seriously if it was individual, or they might find it a little awkward. But when you're working with your peers and you're in groups, you kind of get to bounce ideas off each other and to kind of see where everyone's head is at. And so that, you know, you come to like this realization that, oh, it's not just me, it's this person who thinks that too. And it's important to kind of, you know, keep that conversation going and to and work together in groups. So, you know, you can get that exposure with your peers.
I really like that they brought in a Supreme Court case to the their instruction. I thought that was really interesting. The R.V. Uinchuk, which had its hearing in 1998 and its judgment in 1999. And that was a case about implied consent. And it also discussed some important conversations about stereotypical assumptions being used within a court.
Oh, certainly. I think it's great to introduce a real-life case to the students because it shows the consequences of not understanding the material, in this case, consent. And also it demonstrates the reality of issues surrounding consent and sexual misconduct. And I think that it also clarifies, you know, what constitutes consent, because it's not clear to everyone. And so landmark cases like these clear up those gray zones so there's no confusion. But I was interested in this case about the stereotypes. So what are your thoughts on that?
I think it's important to discuss stereotypes because I don't think it benefits the legal system if we rely on stereotypes to inform our understanding of a situation. I think it actually is a detriment to all the parties involved because it reshapes the facts and the way the analysis will be conducted and ultimately, potentially, the judgment. And as you said, Anita, that was certainly a landmark case that could clear up some gray zones regarding what consent is. And what I think is also important is it's being taught to an audience that is receptive. And they are taking, if you're in grade 12, you're going to be taking your law class. So they can understand some of the material a little bit better because it's very relevant to them and their course material.
Yeah, I think it's great that it gives them, you know, a certain kind of exposure to the legal world and to real life cases. So they kind of, you know, can get their toes dipped in the water and get a feel for what it's like. But I'm interested to know, Corey, like, is this something that you'd want to pursue in your law career, you know, in issues surrounding consent in criminal law?
So it certainly is an issue within criminal law. There are plenty of cases regarding consent and sexual misconduct. But I am interested in criminal law. I want to be a crown attorney in the province of Ontario. So this material is important to me. And I think that's what Kira and Jeff were trying to get at as well, that this isn't only for grade 12 students, the material that they're talking about. What they're talking about can inform and shape our behavior for people of all ages to make sure that our actions are appropriate and in line and abiding by the law and not making it up as we go.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, certain areas of the law, such as this, in terms of criminal law and implied consent, kind of touches close to home for some people. Like Jeff was mentioning, he's really committed to this project and interested in the work that it's doing, because he does have two younger sisters and he wants to make sure that they feel comfortable throughout their life and they're not ever, you know, in a situation where something like this has to come up. So again, it's great that they're giving exposure to these kids so that they can kind of, you know, see for themselves what reality is really like, and to not everything is a joke all the time, and to, you know, some things have to be taken seriously.
And I think it's interesting to note that they chose this project. They weren't slotted into this as part of their curriculum for their first year law studies. They chose to do this on their free time, and they chose this specific project, and I think that lends to their character. And further, they discuss how there's some challenging content there, and I can sympathize with that. That must be very difficult, because they're talking about a very traumatic issue for some people, and they're talking to a lot of students, and there may be survivors in the room. So something they may have to deal with is a fact hypothetical they create that has parallels to the experiences of a survivor. I think that's certainly a challenge that they have to deal with, and I could only imagine how hard it would be to deal with that.
Yeah, and it must certainly be difficult for these presenters, you know, to be cognizant of what they're saying and to kind of feel for the victims in the room, if there are any. But then again, it's also great to give this raw detail and raw cases and talk about surrounding issues and the reality of it so that people are more aware, and so something like this doesn't have to happen to them, hopefully ever, or to any loved ones.
So such a serious conversation. And it's unfortunate that some of the students were having their headphones in as our guests discussed, and were on their phone while the instructors were teaching, because as they could see with that Supreme Court case, a failure to understand consent can get you into some serious legal hot water.
Yeah, I mean, how ironic is it that we were just talking about cell phones in the classroom and how, you know, there's a lack of attention paid when kids are on their phones. And so I thought it was kind of funny when they mentioned that, you know, students were on their phones during the presentation. But, I mean, hopefully that didn't take away from the learning experience and that they got to, you know, take something from it. But I'm interested to know, Corey, like, what do you think would happen if they introduced these projects to a younger demographic, say, you know, students in elementary school? Do you think that they would be able to grasp this idea, or do you think there'd be a lot of backlash from parents and guardians who think that this is an inappropriate conversation to be having with children?
Well, I think it'd depend on which school boards you were trying to introduce it in, and also which, I think it'd be very specific, what ages would you have these conversations about consent? But I'm thinking if it was a more sexualized discussion, it would be in the latter stages of your elementary school. But you could also have a conversation about consent and what's appropriate when just touching another human being in the younger grades, because they could get themselves into hot water, as we talked about before, if they're doing things and not understanding that these actions can have ramifications. And by ramifications, I'm not implying that kindergartners are going to be locked up for violating this. I just believe that the principle could be taught at that age where they could remember it for when they're older and their conduct becomes different. They wouldn't get themselves into so much trouble.
Yeah, and I mean, even if the law doesn't necessarily apply to younger people or younger kids, it's still, you know, good to have this policy in force in terms of, you know, this is right behavior, this is wrong behavior, you know, give people their personal space, don't attack anyone. Because I know in kindergartners or younger ages, you know, there's a kind of a blurry line in terms of, you know, hitting on someone, getting a little aggressive when, you know, they don't share, or, you know, they kind of get rub you the wrong way.
Yeah, kindergartners, I don't know a single person who's of that age who understands the concept of personal space. So it might seem like a foreign concept, but I think a lot of the principles can still be applied to them and teach them those strong principles that they can incorporate later on in their life once things in life become more complex.
Right, and I think that educators need to be kind of aware in terms of how they're presenting the material, because I know recently there was a lot of stipulations surrounding teaching sexual education to younger students. I think that was banned in some classrooms, and you know some parents were uncomfortable with the idea of that being presented to them. So maybe if there's a way that these educators and presenters can present this material in a way that's not only respectful but easy to understand for younger generations, I think that it could have a great impact on them.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. If it can be accommodating to as many people as possible and not offend certain people's values and beliefs, I think that'd be very useful for the education system.
Yeah, and I think it'd be interesting to see, you know, how this can be implemented somehow, maybe in the future to younger kids. But in the meantime, I think that Only Yes Means Yes is a great project that kind of exposes people to the kind of legal ramifications and cases that are relevant to the topic of consent. And again, Only Yes Means Yes is a pro bono students project where student volunteers get to work with the Women's Legal Education in Action Fund, also known as LEAF. It's a national charitable nonprofit organization, and it works to advance the equality of women and girls in Canada through litigation, law reform, and public education using the Canadian Charter. So for those of you interested in the type of work that LEAF does, you can donate to the fund and contribute to their operating program needs. You can check them out on their website, just www.leaf.ca, and you can kind of get an idea of what they're all about.
So I'd like to extend a big thank you to Kira and Jeff, both first-year law students at the University of Windsor, for coming in today and talking to us here at Pro Bono Radio. And I'd also like to thank them for all the great work they're doing with their Only Yes Means Yes project from Pro Bono at Windsor.
And we'd like to thank all of our listeners for tuning into our segment here on CJAM, talking about Only Yes Means Yes and the issues surrounding consent. Remember, you can listen to CJAM 99.1 FM anywhere by going to www.cjam.ca.
And I'd like to remind the listeners that they can tune in next week at the same time from 12 to 1 on Friday to catch the next project and the next topic for Pro Bono.
Kids Wolf's home. He drops into his easy chair. Stand